Welcome, my friends, to the Ultimate Podcast. I got to warn you, this show is going to be a little longer than most of my shows. I try to keep it an hour, but let me tell you what happened. I'm really going up tonight against a heavyweight. Dirk Solko is here, the T-Shoe Whore, really the king of board game podcast. And this is what happened. I did an interview with Dirk, and it went so long, and I wanted to trim it down, but to tell you the truth, I couldn't find anything I wanted to cut out of it. It was so good. It was so funny. And if you guys have been waiting for somebody to really take me to task on some of my point of view, wait no longer, because Dirk does that. He goes at me, Barnes, and is hilarious. And like I said, a real heavyweight tonight with Dirk. I'm going to get right into the interview because, the show's going to go longer than normal. I do want to preface some things for you. One of the things Dirk mentions is in the interview is that he says he has not, at the time we did the interview, listened to the Michael Barnes interview. And the reason I bring this up is it's important because it's really fascinating to listen to this, because I want you guys to listen to Dirk come to the same conclusions as Michael did around the St. Petersburg, when we're talking about the game St. Petersburg, and some of the other theories about Euro games. Listen, he says almost some of the same things that Michael does. It's really fascinating. Also, I should tell you that we talk a little bit about luggage, some luggage jokes. And for those of you that have not listened to all the episodes, I wanted to let you in on the joke. It's kind of an inside joke. I think in my first podcast, I was making fun of Aldi and Dirk because they would talk a lot about going to Essen and talk about luggage. And Dirk did this on another podcast. So I just wanted to let you in on that little joke. But I think you're really going to enjoy this. It was a great, fun interview with Dirk, and I'm going to get right into it. Let's talk to Dirk.
How do I
pronounce your last name, by the way?
Solko.
Solko.
Like now,
where is that? Where are you from originally?
Originally, or where's my family from?
Your family, yes.
That's actually a Czechoslovakian name.
Ah, okay.
It's probably like Sokovic or some shit like that. Speaking of which, am I supposed to keep this PG-13 or what?
Whatever you want to do is fine with me.
I
will not censor you.
that was one of your straight lines. You used it up too early, brother.
Now, hey, how was it? Was it a big change for you moving from Texas to New York?
What, is that a fucking rhetorical question?
Yeah.
Come on. You move from Dallas. Now, I lived in Dallas, okay?
Right.
Any properly educated Texan knows that ain't actually Texas. It's just this little microcosm of plastic tips and BMWs and shit. you know, it's funny, when I suggested to some of my friends that I was not very happy with Dallas, in particular I was not very happy with Dallas women, and that I was going to move to New York to escape the plasticity, they said, "You're going to do what?" And they're like, that's where all the fake women live. And I said, well, I doubt that.
Plasticity, I like that. I don't even know if I can say that word.
Well, you know, whatever. I'm all about making up shit.
All right, let's talk. What we're going to talk about tonight is a lot of things. I want to ask you, I'm curious about the Board Game Geek. Aldi's doing this website full-time as a job now. Did you sell your holdings to him? Do you still profit from it? Since you both started the website?
I have never taken a red cent from the website.
Really?
Nope. I still own half of it.
You do own half of it, though?
Yeah. I'm an equity share. I mean, I'm Mr. 49%. So that's the thing is like, you know, we incorporated primarily as a for tax reasons, obviously.
Right.
Now, there's a difference between the business itself being quote-unquote profitable and or generating revenue and whether or not you actually want to take the next leap and start paying employees, right?
Right.
when we actually decided, or when Aldi decided to commit to the website full time, it was a pretty momentous decision, because he had to convince his wife that the income levels were high enough that he could justify the move.
Right.
From a security standpoint. And, you know, she's got a decent job with health care and all that kind of stuff that he can piggyback off of. If I had a wife and stuff like that, I might be more inclined to do that, because, you know, I'd get health insurance through her instead of...
Exactly.
You know, but, so, you know, he runs it. I help him every once in a while, but it's really his show, man.
Okay. Now, on the web, we're talking about the website. Now, in your opinion, is there a Euro elitist attitude on that website?
Can you rephrase that question? So
a Euro snoot or Euro elitist?
Yeah, no, I know.
Attitude.
Can you phrase it a little bit more so it's a little bit more slanted? I don't think that question was quite, you know, slanted. Just, you know,
it's not slant. It's a straight. It's a straight question, Dirk. Is it?
Absolutely not a straight question. Here's the deal. So now you and Aldi talked last week, all right?
Did you listen to that, by the way?
I listened to that.
Okay.
And you know, you're talking about the old guard, as it were, right?
Yeah. And you, what you're a part of, Dirk?
I know. The thing is, the proper story, when Aldi talked about getting the invite to the gathering, was me. Okay.
I mean,
I met a guy, George, who I now work with. He got me, and I got everybody else there. But I mean, that was actually before, like, the geek was even the geek.
Okay.
So, not, you know, and the truth is, yeah, we are old guard, because this is super top secret, and you all have to die after I tell you this. But there was a super secret emailing list that existed before. Well, still does exist, but
I knew it. I knew there was conspiracy somewhere here.
Well, actually, to be honest with you, Steve, if you'd listened to some of our show a little bit carefully, you would have actually known most.
I know, I did. I listened to every one of your shows very carefully.
That was actually one of our little running jokes, as you recall. So anyway, the thing is, there was a super secret email group that wasn't secret because they wanted to be secret. It was secret because of the fact that everybody would want to be in it if it wasn't.
Okay.
It wasn't meant to be elitist per se. But if you know anything about sociology, in particular sociology of groups, which the geek is a very, very interesting study of.
Now I never majored in sociology because I have this addiction to eating, Dirk. I wanted to actually get a job when I got out of college.
Hey, brother, you're talking to the original whore. I mean, I moved to New York. computer consultant, for Christ's sake. I understand that.
Right.
What I'm saying is like, I mean, if you look at, like, groups, you know, they can only get to a certain size before they start essentially becoming less of a group and more of a rabble, I guess, or something like
right,
that.
Right, okay.
And so when you study those kinds of things, the thing is like, when everybody is in it, then the thing it is ceases to be it.
I see.
You know what I'm saying? And so over the years, the super secret thing is still there. They call themselves diggers. And they're still there, but it's nothing like it was originally.
Okay.
And a lot of that is because of the geek. So anyway, a lot of the people you're talking about, the Greg Schlossers of the world and things that, like, led up to that, that's where all those guys were. And that's where all those guys were posting all this great information. And it was basically, you know, they always had, like, a yearly debate about whether or not they should go public, blah, blah, blah. And the thing is, it was never meant to be elitist. I can see how it is elitist. In fact, I've done everything in my power to, like, level the playing field. I mean, everything about the geek is egalitarian. There's nothing, you know, but the problem is that you still have to have some, like, iota, some degree of respect for these guys that actually did all this work. I mean, you know, Tom Vassell, I don't agree with him, like, you know, 9 out of 10 words that come out of the guy's mouth, but damn, that's a lot of words that come out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Made a contribution. You know what I'm saying?
But the problem I have with Tom Vassell is he's turned this whole free game thing into an industry, And these publishers give him those free games because they know Tom will give them a soft hand on those reviews.
Yeah.
And that's the truth, whether you want to believe it or anybody wants to believe it or not.
I didn't refute that. The problem is, I think you guys automatically assume that that's bad, right? I'm not sure that it is bad.
No, nobody's saying it's bad. Well, it's not bad. It's misleading. What it is misleading because if you get a new person on here that starts reading those reviews, I'm just pointing that out. They have the freedom to read them or not read them.
Right.
But they are softball reviews.
I won't necessarily disagree with that. And if actually, if you looked at like my game reviews, well, actually, if you did your research like you did on me, like you did with Aldi, you looked at the fact that I actually have written a couple of reviews back in the day.
Right.
Now, I have written, I don't know, maybe like 20, 30 reviews back in, a long time ago. But the thing is back then, when I wrote a review, it was a review that I actually wanted to write. Like, when I write a Euphrates and Tigris, Tigris and Euphrates review, it was because I felt passionate about that game. Right. So if that meant it was a 9 or it was a 10, right?
And that's the kind of review I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a sellout review.
But I mean, the thing is, if I play an 8 game or a 7 game, right? I may not actually want to tell people about it because I'm just not incensed, right?
Right. I agree with that.
That's me personally. And if the game gets into like the lower than that, not only am I not thinking about writing a review, the only time I actually think about writing a review is when it hits the lower echelon into the 1 through 3, and then I'm like, yeah, and I gotta warn people about it.
Right.
But ultimately the thing is like you're talking about somebody that's gonna go out there and put work into it, right? People aren't gonna do that. Normal discerning people are not gonna do that. And so I can't fault Tom for, like, writing a bunch of reviews that are wussy, other than the fact that I always just know that it's Tom, so I'm not going to listen to him.
Okay. Let's move on here. Now, I have a question. Can you point to a particular post on your website by me or any other of this Ameritrash stuff where you thought we crossed the line?
No, I can't. I don't actually follow it. I don't follow a lot of the fervors as closely as perhaps other people do.
Right.
For me, honestly, I don't mind a little bit of, like, agitation. I just find that this level of agitation is a little much. I mean...
Can you expound on that, please?
Actually, I think Rick is probably a good example. Well, I mean, I know Rick... And I've gamed with him. In fact, I met him before the game Board Game News actually came about. He was just a guy. He seemed nice. I don't know. I talked with him. Took him out. We went out to Wendy's and had a burger. But the point is like he made a very significant contribution to gaming. Period. Right. And I find it a little disheartening that Michael Barnes. And in particular him, just because he's the focal point for this kind of stuff, we'll take him to task for that and give him shit about this stuff. I mean, I think he screwed up when he didn't come on your show and try to defend himself.
But
at the same time, I can't blame him for wanting to do that considering, everybody just...
Now you listened to the interview I did with Aldi, and I know you listened to it because you thought that I was going to be rough on. Was I rough on Aldi?
I
was very polite with Aldi and let him speak. We got into a little friendly debate on the free games thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's just the kind of thing we're doing here. We're not calling anybody names.
Actually, no, it's important to note, Steve, I agree with you. And that's definitely, I was going to come on this no matter what, despite the fact that I apparently didn't reply to your emails. That's a personal fault of mine.
I don't fault you for that, no.
Anyway, the thing is like, I can appreciate how, the thing is like, if he doesn't want to come play your game, I'm sorry that that's the case, but that's his choice.
Now, let's talk about Rick. Are you aware that Rick deleted his account on your website?
Yeah, I am.
Now, was he justified in doing this, or does this really just boil down to a Eurosnoot hissy fit? In your opinion, sir?
No, I mean, okay, yeah, no, wow, how am I gonna reply to that? No, I mean, listen, I'm not here to defend Rick, all right? I'm saying...
No, I'm asking you, was Rick justified in deleting his account with all his contributions, or was it just a hissy fit, a Eurosnoot hissy fit?
I don't think that's an either or, but I think he should not have deleted his material.
Right, I agree with that. That was silly. Now, he's the one acting silly, not us. He's the one acting silly by doing stuff like that, and it's just proving our point time and time again, Dirk.
I don't know about that. Insofar as, like I said, the thing is, I think that it got to that point. The thing is, I think you're talking about chapter 12, and we missed chapters 1 through 11. Right? The thing is,
all right, yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah,
were his contribution to Board Game News. I mean, this is like the single best website that isn't called Board Game Geek, for Christ's sake. I mean, and it's dead. And the thing is,
if you listen to one of my podcasts, I forget which one it was, but I praised Rick. I actually enjoyed his Gone Cardboard. I used it, and I said he was never been an arch enemy on my list. I praised him.
And again, I think I put this down to misunderstandings more than anything else.
Yeah.
The thing is, I have a lot of respect for him, regardless of whatever has transpired recently. I have a lot of respect for him just because I know what he's done over the last couple of years. He's made like no money, and he still put out a great product for everybody to revel in. And I gotta respect that, plain and simple. And
yeah,
like when it comes,
I agree with that. His product was good. You guys' product on the website is good. I've said that many times.
Well, I'm not fishing for comments.
Sure you are.
No, I'm not, actually. The Geek runs itself and stuff like that.
Right.
The greatest because y'all are great, not because I did anything. I mean, Aldi can actually chime in and say take some credit for it, but certainly not me. I'm just a big blowhard. All I'm saying is, I think there's a little bit more respect initially, rather than using derogatory terms like Eurosnoot, to frame questions that are a fair question, right? Is it right for Rick to have deleted his account, or is he being maybe a little reactionary? That is the proper way to say that.
Okay, what's the answer to that?
Being a Eurosnoot dickhead.
What's the answer to the question you just phrased?
Overreacting.
He is overreacting. Thank you.
I think.
I agree with that.
Okay, sorry. Get it out.
No, let's talk about, I'm very interested in the relationship you had with Aldi and the website. Have you guys ever got into a heated argument over how the website should be operated or run?
No. No.
So that's a definite yes, right?
Obviously, I mean, as this interview has already demonstrated, I mean, clearly, anybody tells me something, I just roll right over and say, absolutely, yes, sir, may I have another?
that comes with your initiation later into the league, Dirk.
Oh, really? I mean, the thing is, Aldi and I were a very good team. Aldi is a dreamer. Aldi is a doer. Aldi is a dreamer and a doer all at the same time. He it was funny because he mentioned how we actually got started in the podcasting thing.
Yeah.
Right? Now, his version of the story is just bullshit, okay? this is how the conversation really went, right?
Okay. I'm listening.
Okay. Anyway, so the conversation went like this. He called me up. He says, "Hey, listen, man, you got this thing on the web, and they call it a podcast." And he says, "Hey, we should do that." I said, "Why? I mean, what? Who the hell wants to listen to that? I mean, nobody wants to do that." And then he asked me again 2 weeks later. I said, "No." He asked me again 2 weeks later. He says, "Hey, man, why don't you do this? I bought all this stuff," and I go, "All right, fine. But only because you bought all this stuff, and it's going to break your little heart if I don't do it." And then I liked it. So anyway.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Now, Aldi mentioned when you got, I'm very interested in this, because I listened to all of you guys. I thought they were great, by the way.
Yeah, I like them, actually. I did enjoy them.
He mentioned that you guys often drank wine when you did the show. Now, tell me the truth. How many cartons of wine did you drink during the show?
Okay, I mentioned they work on Wall Street, right? I can afford good bottles. We oftentimes would cap off a bottle apiece, actually.
Okay. Now, Aldi was talking about, I didn't include this on the interview, but we were talking afterwards that it's about some of the technical things. And he said your voice was so bassy. And a lot of people don't know this. I did a little research on you that you actually used to sing bass for the Oak Ridge Boys. So I tell you what, Bubbles, cue up some of Dirk singing bass for the Oak Ridge Boys. This is Dirk at his finest. I'm sure you folks have heard this. Here he is, Dirk.
Giddy up. Papa, papa, mau, mau. Giddy up. Papa, papa, mau, mau.
All right, that was great, Dirk. I really understand you got those gray-haired ladies' hips a-wiggling and the redneck girls a-giggling back when you performed with the Oak Ridge Boys.
As a matter of fact, no, that's not true.
But I hear you got fired because you couldn't grow a long enough beard.
Well, that's definitely not true. I may be like lily white when I get out in the sun, but man, I am one hairy guy. No, that's not the case.
Let's get on those podcasts. You often had game designers on there. I wanted to ask you, do you think we're giving too much attention to these game designers? Because I often found the most interesting guests were the gamers, not the designers, in my personal point of view.
I won't necessarily disagree with that. Well, for me anyway, one of the key constituents of one of the key components of a good show back then was actually the guests. I might be a decent interviewer, probably less good at it than you are, but at the same time, I'm not bad. But unfortunately, I do need some. I need some zip. I need some pop.
Right.
I got nothing, and I can't create it out of thin air.
Who was a favorite guest on you guys' show that you had? Your favorite?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I hate to sound redundant, but I mean that the San Francisco Reiner show was funny as hell.
And Aldi seemed to think you were intimidated. Did you hear that?
Well, I mean, I don't want to make this a complete rehash of all these.
Right.
Yeah, I was surprised. I don't know, intimidated. Sure, I guess. The thing is like when you get in that role, when you're playing. I mean, the thing is, I have to play a particular role when I'm in that situation.
Right. Right.
I wouldn't say I was intimidated so much as surprised, but whatever.
Right. Right. You're saying whatever, it's creeping me out.
Oh.
Now tell me, we're talking about game designers. Tell us the truth, how much influence do these game designers really have over the content on Board Game Geek?
They're a user just like anybody else, really.
Really?
Yeah.
If a high profile, I guess what I'm getting at, if a high profile game designer emails you guys and is upset with, you know, one of our posts or anybody's post, are you guys more likely to pull that because it's coming from them than a regular user?
Now, Steve, that's a really wussy question. I think the proper way is if Alan Moon calls me up crying about some geek list that insulted him and delete it. That's what you want to say, right?
Right.
The answer is maybe yes, maybe no. The thing is like ultimately, you know, we've gone through a lot of contortions over the years trying to figure out what the proper balance of moderation, what you guys call censorship,
it is censorship.
Whatever, it is not censorship.
It is censorship. It is plain and simple.
You know why it isn't?
Why?
Because I own half of it. United States of America. I made absolutely no such promises to anybody. That is my website. That is all these websites. If we want to shut it off tomorrow, there ain't a damn thing none of you guys can do about it.
Then how come you don't censor us more than you do? You know why you don't? Because we're bringing in more clicks than these people that put on cakes of meeples and cats. That's why.
I don't know about that, man. I doubt that. I really do.
Oh, yeah. Well, I see the downloads I'm getting, and they've got to go, and most of them are coming through your website. So.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's fine. I'm not trying to criticize. I'm just saying, the thing is like, at some point, you know, unless we wanted to hire, and when I say hire, I mean, like, have slave labor, you know, 20, 30 people that are basically going to go wash through our data all day, every day. No, it's impossible.
Talking about that, what are these other how does these other admins come into play on Board Game Geek? Do they actually have areas they police? How does that work?
Well, let's see here. If you're stupid enough to spend a lot of time on there, and we feel that you're actually like responsible, we'll give you an admin position. And by that, by you, I mean not you, Steve. I mean like
normal. Right. I understood that.
Okay. Yeah, we don't like rednecks.
You're calling me a redneck.
Yes, I am. Anyway, so
I knew you had a lot. You know what, Dirk? I like you. You got a lot of moxie. You got a lot of moxie.
Yeah.
That's why you're an honorary member of the league.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
We don't hand those out lightly, Dirk.
Really? all right. Well, I mean, the thing is, honestly, it isn't that. Okay, Matthew Monin, you know, Dan Karp, they've got a really bad rap, but they don't have responsibility. They just feel like they're trying to make it a place where a lot of people want to go.
Yeah.
And this goes back to the sociology thing I mentioned earlier. The thing is as we grow, the site grows, we attract more people. The more people we attract, the harder it is to maintain a certain tenor.
Right.
Lose control of what's going on with the website.
Right.
And so over the years, what we've done is try to actually engineer our way out of many of those situations by creating smaller and smaller compartments that people can go to.
Uh-huh.
Or, in the case of the filters, ways of filtering it so that people wouldn't necessarily see all of it. Because right now, there's a lot of people that come and then leave instantly because it's like drinking from a fire hose. You just can't do it, right? So honestly, the intent was never to your moderation system was actually, believe it or not, was not to make, you know, the quote unquote censorship people happy. It was honestly just to give us a way of compartmentalizing the data in different ways so that we could present it to different people. The thing is a lot of people have no interest in listening to...
You know what? That sounds all nice, but my take on that was that you guys put that in place because you didn't want to be accused of censorship. You wanted the people to run it, not you guys.
You're more than welcome to think that, Steve, but you're wrong. Honestly, part of it is that the admins actually can step away from the firing line, because I think they step in, and when they step in, they're not trying to filter stuff, they're just trying to maintain the sanctity of BoardGameGeek that as they see it. It's not like they're not on some personal crusade.
What do you mean sanctity?
Sorry, what?
What do you mean by sanctity of BoardGameGeek?
Well, I mean the how they envision, how each of us envisions the Board Game Geek to be the thing that we want to go back to as often as we do.
How do you define a personal attack on your website?
I find a personal attack?
On your website.
I think Euro Snoot actually is a pretty bad one. I don't like that. I think, for me, a personal attack... Honestly, in terms of personal attacks, it's very difficult to point to any one thing. I will say, however, that whenever you have, like in the case of Michael Barnes, when you're making 10 posts for every one somebody else is doing,
right,
you have a tendency to think that maybe, just maybe, A, you need a life, and B, you need to relax and unclench a little and let some other people contribute to the conversation.
I like that term you use, unclench. That's very good.
Well, thank you. I
do you think these podcasts that I'm doing, do you think these are personal attacks?
No, I don't.
No, you can tell me the truth. You don't have to be nice.
No, I think the thing is you're doing a fairly, I want to say inflammatory. Is that the right word? Your presentation style is that. I don't disagree with that per se. It's an aggressive style. The thing is like I don't think that, you know, to harken back to the earlier conversation, I don't think that they would consider them personal attacks, as they say in the 12th chapter. But you're leaving out all of the stuff.
Right, right. Now you listened to, I think you listened to the first one because you did comment on it.
I did.
I had quite a bit of, I was poking quite a bit of fun at you. Were you insulted at that?
No.
Did you laugh or were you insulted?
I was laughing.
Yeah.
But it's also very important to know that I'm me and that I've been sitting at the head of the geek for a long time, man. I mean, a lot of people have taken a lot of shots at me. And, you know, after being at work all day doing what I do, you know, essentially, here, I'll tell you a little story.
Okay.
This is what I really hate about my job. So I go in and I'm getting a cup of coffee and it's Monday morning and I'm walking past this lady's office and she looks a little tired. I say, hey, did you have a long weekend? You look a little tired this morning. She says, nah. I said, well, you're just not a morning person? Because I know I'm not. And she says, no, actually, I really like the mornings. But, you know, if you're hourly and you're not working really hard in the morning, does that mean you're charging us for that? That kind of stuff really has a tendency to make your skin a little thicker than most.
You know? Right.
and so, you know, if I don't take offense at it, it's because I actually listen to you. And frankly, I might be accused of being a little inflammatory myself, so I'm more likely to look the other way. I don't know what all the rest of the guys are thinking. All I know is that, as I say, you know, there's a lot of shit that led up to where we are, not just now. So I don't think you're what you're saying here is not bad, but when you do call out particular names and you say, listen, so and so, he's a blah, it doesn't matter what blah is, it's derogatory. And it's,
well, I think the point is that when you got Schlosser, you got Rick and Vassal, all this work they've done,
yep,
they put it out there and it should be open in the sheer volume of it to, yep, not comment on some. To not comment on it, to me, is just like drinking the Kool-Aid and accepting it, because if you don't agree with it.
Actually, but the thing is, I don't feel that they don't have a problem with criticism. I've criticized all of them repeatedly over the years.
Right.
In fact, I've criticized some of them for being thin-skinned on these kinds of issues.
Right.
But I mean, you know, that's still their choice, man. I mean, you can't vilify them just because they don't want to play your game. And that's all.
No. We have not vilified them. Were we vilifying them?
I mean, all I'm saying is maybe you haven't. I don't know. I'm talking about just the whole kind of thing. I mean,
did you listen to the interview I did with Michael Barnes?
I haven't, and I meant to before.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that to see where you seem to be. More upset with his post than mine. Is that, would that be a fair statement?
I think that's a fair statement. And honestly, you know, I don't have a problem. I mean, when all they said, I don't have a problem with his content. I don't either. Generally speaking, I tend to agree with what you guys are saying. I mean, this whole Ameritrash thing. Oh, you know, let's, like, okay, take it from my perspective. All right, I was the quote unquote, you know, gamer elite. Blah 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 blah. Right. I found these Euro games, and I had a 24-hour a day, 7 days a week boner over them. I mean, I was like a 16-year-old kid that just found out he could masturbate. It was great, you know. And I mean, it was. I loved it. I could stick my teeth into it, and there was all these games, and I learned all of them.
You know what? That sounds like Greg at the latest Kramer and Kiesling release.
Okay, but see, that's just Greg. I mean, he's excited 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That, you know, I mean, that's just him, man. I mean, he...
Yeah, and that goes back to when we were talking about your show and the game designers, why I found him a much more interesting guest on your show than the game designers, because he had that enthusiasm, you know. And you have it, too.
I agree. Honestly, well, I mean, the reason we didn't have... The reason we had game designers on a lot, very often, was because that's what people wanted.
I see. Okay.
And we had the connections to get the interviews, and that's what people wanted. That's what we did. And honestly, after interviewing a couple of quote-unquote normal gamer people, the shows really weren't all that good.
Yeah. Let's talk about... We were talking about the Ameritrash. You were getting Eurogames. In your opinion, do Eurogames have low replayability?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, that's one of the points Michael brought up in his interview. He thought... Because we were talking about St. Petersburg on him. He rated it initially an 8, and then after repeated playings, he lowered it to a 2. And you would agree that they do tend to have low replayability, right?
Absolutely.
Why do you think that is?
Well, actually, you know, it's the same reason that they appealed to me. If I may, as I said, when I found them, it was just amazing. Because I had never, ever found games like that before. They made sense to me. I'm a computer scientist. This was wonderful. They didn't have Section A, Rule B for fucking scenario, whatever.
Right.
It was logical. It was clean. It was designed. And it worked. It was balanced. And the thing is, that was very exciting because you felt like you could really sink your teeth into these. Now, when I first started playing, all I wanted to play was really heavy stuff. We're talking like Demacher and El Caballero, and you know, followed up with a nice relaxing game of Java and stuff like this. Stuff that is so bone dry that it just, you know, just you'd have to be drinking water or like have an IV or something.
Right.
I mean, you know, after I got over that, once I got there, I was realizing, you know, ultimately, I'm not having fun, and more importantly, and this is really the realization that got me, was the fact that what I did on my turn was important, insofar as it was baseline competent. But what really mattered was what you did during your turn to affect me, right?
Right.
Everybody plays competently, and then, you know, then what really matters in those games is the metagame. And when I found that out, I was a little disappointed because, frankly, I was winning a lot, and I realized a lot was not because I was a freaking smart guy, which I'm not smart, but I'm not, like, stupid. I mean, I realized that I was manipulating people's emotions.
Right.
I was telling them, don't attack me because I'm not winning, you know, blah, blah, blah. And once I hit that realization, I really came to the idea, as you say, that they have low repeatability because ultimately there's just not a whole lot of things you can do. But that does not necessarily mean that the whole genre is bad by itself. The thing is, you have to let people kind of progress through that. And if they want to say, you know, Kenichi is a god, I don't care. That's fine. I mean, he's not for me personally, but... I can point to a time in my life when I thought that was the case.
Right. Now, still talking about Eurogames, what do you think is the most overrated Eurogame right now?
Okay, I'm a little pissed off at Aldi for taking my thunder on that one. Because, I mean, he's like, oh, I've only played Kalis a half a dozen times. I've never played Kalis! Overrated? Probably Puerto Rico.
Really?
Yeah. I think Puerto Rico. And that's primarily just because it's, like, I mean, for one, I'm a little disappointed it's still number one. Number two, the whole, I mean, never. I mean, really, Puerto Rico was definitely one of the games that was one of the ones that really pushed me over the edge on the whole... What I do during my turn doesn't matter so much as what you do during my turn, during your turn, to affect me, right?
Whoa, that's deep.
Well, it's true. I'm trying to be deep here. Let's put a glass of wine. It'll be fine. But, I mean, I was just like, it doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
This whole thing about people writing strategy guides, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Now, you're
winning the game. You're not thinking. You just follow.
Your number one game, obviously, is Tissue, right?
Yeah.
I want to ask you this. When you go to these conventions and people want to play Tissue with, do you find they want to challenge you just to say they beat Dirk at Tissue?
No.
You don't see any of that?
Actually, I've been seriously thinking about contacting the president of Fata Morgana and telling him he owes me a percentage of his earnings, because frankly, I have taught more people that game. Now, the thing is like, it for me, T2 is really good because it's a great con game, like a game to play at a convention.
Right.
It's the perfect, it really brings me back to playing spades in college.
I love spades. I've never played T2. It's a little more complex, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, once you learn, it's got some rules, but I can teach you very quickly, and once you get kind of past that first game, it's one of those games where I can play, but I'm not concentrating, and I can actually sit there and shoot the shit with the people that I'm playing with.
Right.
It's very important. So, yes, as a game like that, Tissue is definitely my favorite. My recent favorite is actually probably Arcadia von Baumeister. But, you know.
Now, let's talk about board games. Where do you... You know, board games tend to have this image of being wimpy, geeky, girly. Where do you think that comes from?
Well, let's see here. Speaking as a single man who owns half of a website called Board Game Geek, when it comes to dating, I do not mention that.
You don't mention that?
No, I don't. I mean, I'd like to. I'm not ashamed of it. It's more just that people are very polarized. They often have very, very strong opinions. And when I say people, I mean normal people.
Right.
Very strong opinions, very strong associations with board games. It's Aunt Bessie bought me this copy of Monopoly when I was, 10 years old. And she made me play it, and I hated it, and I just have avoided it ever since. Or, I love board games. We play Pictionary every third Thursday.
Yeah, I see.
Blah, blah, blah. I mean,
now, is there a game that you personally play that you're embarrassed to admit you play and enjoy?
No.
You're not going to tell us? There's just not one, you're saying, right?
Well, I mean, I don't, I'm not going to... I'll play Descent, or I'll play, your typical Ameritrash entry. I mean, honestly, one of my favorite games from a couple of years ago was Nexus Ops. I thought that was a great
game. I love that, yeah. Fantastic. Yeah.
Especially after you played Twilight Imperium, and you're like, okay, boy, this is long, drawn out, and kind of painful, considering, ultimately I want to go out and mess some shit up. I want to kill some things. The greatest thing about Nexus Ops is they got it right.
You finally
stuff up, and it doesn't hurt you.
And it doesn't take 4 years to play the game.
Well, it's not so much the 4 years. It's the fact that in most war games, if I hit you, then I'm making you weak and me weak so that a third party can come over and kill either one of us.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Structured it in such a way that you can actually go in there, messing stuff up, get some points. And sure, you might lose some ground, but you're not really losing ground. So that was definitely one of my favorite entries in that category. I mean, the thing is like, as I got disenchanted with Euros, then I was able to play more of your quote-unquote Ameritrash stuff more and more. I mean, all these have been pushing on me for years, but I definitely am enjoying that kind of stuff a lot more the last couple of years.
Yeah, have you ever played a game where you found yourself laughing so hard almost to the point of tears?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I don't like it. It's kind of against my religion.
Okay, so there's no game that, yeah. That didn't happen with you when you played Java?
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, I tried to put this water piece on top of this other one. And then this
stop,
guy,
my ribs, right?
My water on the thing, and I go, no, you caught me, and then that was it.
I have a philosophical question for you.
Okay.
And if, let's say, if the government, let's say they imposed a huge tax on board games, they did a scientific study, and they came out saying that board games are a frivolous activity and it's not good for the American people. Now, and they impose this huge tax on board games. Would you yourself join or start a revolution to protest this tax?
Well, I would definitely be joining or leading or whatever. I would assume I would have to be some sort of leadership insofar as my association with the geek, but I don't know. I mean, that's horrible.
That's interesting. Now, let's take this a bit further, take it out of the realm of board games and just talk about, say they redo the income tax, it's a flat tax. Have you ever thought about at what percentage, 45%, 50%, 55%, where you would just say enough is enough and join a tax revolt?
That's an interesting question, considering you know I work in finance. I happen to be one of the few liberals left in finance. I tend to like paying taxes more than I like having corporations run roughshod over everybody.
But at what point, have you ever thought about at what point, what percentage you would just say, I assume it would be before 100%.
Obviously, somewhere before 100. I have no idea other than the fact that right now the percentages I'm getting are getting close to obscene, so I don't know.
Right.
I don't know about the whole revolution thing. I mean, yeah, you want me to sign something? Yeah, sure, I'm down for it. You want me to vote? yeah. The problem is, inside of that context, I'm afraid I'm a little apathetic about revolutions.
Yeah. That's where I was taking all this in terms of apathy on the website about, you know, kind of being afraid to speak out what you know and what games you like and what you don't and how to do it in a way that's not insulting but still you can still name names but you know not insulting. I think that's sort of an art that we seem to be losing. Do you kind of follow my point?
I do. Well, I mean, the thing is like, when it comes to, like, the discussion of whether or not a reviewer should actually review a game, I agree with you 100%. I don't think that what a lot of people do are reviews in the strict sense of the word, right? And in particular, I believe you used, was it Siskel or Ebert? I forget what.
Siskel. He's no longer with us, but he did discuss this in depth in an interview.
Which I can believe. And to be honest with you, I really felt that it was my duty to, whenever I did write a review or give somebody my opinion, I always felt that it was very important to give more of a negative opinion than a positive opinion, in that if you still liked the negative, then you were pretty good.
Now, on the negative, don't you think anyway the negative is more beneficial to these game companies and designers anyway?
I think the game companies would definitely disagree with you. I was walking through the Hall of the Vessin last year when one unannounced publisher basically walked up to me and said, So, is there any way that you can basically just stop everybody from breaking my game too? I said, no, I really can't do anything about that.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going earlier when we were talking about game designers, publishers influencing the website.
They don't have any more influence on you on the website than.
But they're trying to, right? They're definitely trying to. You just proved that.
Well, they can send me as many emails as they want, as you
right,
as
right.
you personally have found. I reply to maybe 1 in 20. and 1 in 20 is really good compared to the percentage that Aldi replies to. So. So I mean, the thing is, honestly, they have control over the website insofar as if we ever cross paths with them on an IP, intellectual property.
And I don't want you to misunderstand me. I'm all for the commercialism on there, the ads. Those are actually useful. If a game's on sale, I like that. But as far as them controlling content, I'm a little uneasy with that. But I'm not telling you how to run your website.
Oh, I mean,
But that's just me. If I was running that website, I would have the ads, sure, everything great. But as far as them controlling what people say, I would let everything go.
Well, okay, now, Steve, I'm going to give you a little constructive criticism here, brother. I went to your website. Let me say personally, speaking on behalf of everybody who goes to Board Game Geek, it's a damn good thing you don't own the website. Number two.
Look, I fully admit I am not a technical guy like you guys.
Dude, I'm just trying to back. That's all. Anyway, so
you don't like the girl in the bikini?
Dude,
would you prefer Tom Vassell in a bikini?
I'm not the overtly American flag bathing suit thing, because that gets into the redneck thing. But again, we're not. the point you're saying is do these people actually control content? No, they don't.
That's good to hear that. That's all I wanted to hear. That's fantastic. I applaud you for that, sir.
They can call us all they want. That said, I mean, I'm going to say in general. I mean, there have definitely been cases where we've taken something down because we thought it crossed the line. And it's not very often, no. But the thing is, ultimately, they don't control it, but they do have some input insofar as they're users like anybody else.
Right, right.
In that said, I mean, yeah, you know, Bruno Faduti calls me and says or emails me something, and I'm gonna probably be more likely to listen to him than if I was just some random guy
like me, right?
Well, actually, no, not you.
That's okay.
You know, the funny thing about it is, you know, you talk about Tom,
yeah,
Vassell, and he basically looked at Greg, right? He looked at Greg Schlosser, and he said, you know, that guy is very notable. He gets a bunch of free games, and what did he do for it? He basically wrote a bunch of reviews. He's like, you know, I can write reviews. I can do that. And so he very, very specifically set out to become the next Greg Schlosser, which he has done. The thing is, to be honest with you, Steve, you've taken a different tack, but you're on the same trajectory, brother. You're known. I know you now. Other people know you now.
Yeah, but there's a big difference. There's a big difference, Dirk. I don't know any, not one, game designer, game company, or nothing. That's the untouchable part.
Now, I agree with the whole don't accept review copies thing. That's,
oh, you do agree with that?
Hell yeah. I mean,
And you know, and to me, it's not so much the free, you know, if a game company would give a free game here and there to a whole bunch of different people, that's even kind of okay with me. But when Tom Vassell's turned it into an industry and they can count on that softball review, you know, I just think people should be aware of that.
Well, I mean, I think they are, actually, if they're at all. The thing is like, ultimately, it's not your job to defend them, to look out for these people. Because the thing is like, you review any time on the internet, you got to realize sooner or later that everything you read there is bullshit. And you've actually, you know, the thing is that you can't tell anything about a person on the internet until you've seen something from them over a long period of time.
Yeah,
you're going to read one Tom Vassell review and basically convict him because of the fact that
that's not true. I've read more than one.
I was making an example.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I mean, if you who doesn't know Tom reads one of Tom's reviews and then you go out and you buy the game, you realize it sucks. That's your fault because you're not discerning enough. You didn't look at multiple reviews. You didn't look at where that guy came from. I mean, you're not going to believe Gene Siskel actually knows his ass from a hole in the ground unless you actually listen to the guy over a period of time.
Right.
Well, I mean, the question is ultimately, and this is really... This
so where did, then why do you agree about the free copies then?
I agree with the free copies in that... Like,
because it does corrupt the review, right?
But the question is not necessarily the problem is that a review? I agree with you. That's not a review. The question bigger question is that harmful to the quote-unquote industry, or who's it harmful for?
Well, it's harmful to the individual that's new to the hobby, comes in, reads one of Tom's reviews, doesn't like the game, and then goes away when we want to attract more people.
Okay. Now, that actually might be perhaps the problem. Ultimately, most of the people that would, I mean, for one thing, nobody's going to come in and the first thing they see is Tom's review. Period. End of story.
Have you seen how many reviews are on there?
Yeah.
That could be the case.
No, that's not true at all. Actually, it's mostly because the thing is, I know people come to Board Game Geek, all right? They come for Axies and Allies. They come for
right.
various reasons. They are not coming necessarily to see Tom. Nobody has any idea who Tom is.
No, I'm just saying that you see he does so many reviews that when you come to Board Game Geek, they're there on the forum. You see them posted. You see Tom. They see the game. If they're interested in the game, they're going to click there because he does so many. He's on the front page. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I guess my point is that when it's all said and done, if your only experience with board gaming is Monopoly, and even if you know the game that you actually want, the game you end up buying is Crocodile Pool Party, which I have no idea. I just know it has a reputation. Then you know. So be it. Who cares? I mean, you enjoyed it. Ultimately, the thing is like virtually any of the games that are fairly modern are probably going to be a better experience for anybody willing to try them than what they've had up till that point. Now, the thing is like ultimately, I don't buy the fact that that actually influences anybody. I think people that are getting into the hobby, that have already made another half a dozen purchases, you know, a half a dozen random purchases, and then they start really looking for something that they want, and they see a Tom review, they might be misled at that point, right? Because of the fact that they're actually looking deeper than just one or two games.
Right.
But I think...
That's a good point, yeah.
You come to Board Game Geek, and if you're going to buy any game, I don't know what that is. I'm assuming it's going to be something like Puerto Rico, because it's so highly rated. You go to Puerto Rico page, you're going to tell me you can actually find Tom's review of Puerto Rico on the... I can't. Oh, and I designed the damn thing. You know, the thing is like, I really think you're attributing too much to it because you're already in. You're already informed. You know, like, infinitely more than these poor schlubs that you're trying to protect. I just don't buy it. I just don't buy it.
Well, that's your opinion. I think... I'm glad to hear you agree with the free games issue, though.
I agree with that. I agree that if you were going to write reviews that were quote-unquote reviews, yes. But I'm not sure that this industry, board gaming, the niche board gaming industry, frankly, would benefit from quote-unquote real reviews at this stage of the game.
Okay.
Now, any PR is good PR.
Right. I want to read you something that you wrote on...
Oh, shit.
after you listen to my first podcast.
This was my own words against me.
No. I just want to make sure you remember what we're talking about.
I do have a tendency to do that. Sorry.
You said, we're talking about, we're talking about you tempering your opinions. You said, I've never pulled my opinions because I was afraid of the reactions from publishers. Rather, I've tempered my opinions a bit. Because I realized how my personal gaming experiences were so incredibly subjective after so many years of gaming that the, quote, strong opinions you cite weren't so strong. And then you say, my revelation, who you play your game with and what mood you're in when you play the game has more to do with the game experience than the intrinsic quality of the game. And I have to disagree with this. I think this is really... just a cop-out. Let me finish. I think it's a cop-out because I think the quality of the game really trumps those factors. Because I think, you know, if I'm playing St. Petersburg and I've just won the lottery,
yeah.
I'm on top of the world, right?
Yeah.
It would still be a bad game. I think there has to be at least a good game element in place. And this is modified by those factors you state, but I do think the quality of the game trumps those factors.
Okay, well, actually, now, St. Petersburg is a good example for me personally because I very, very distinctly remember my first game of that.
Right.
at the gathering of friends, which I have an invite to and you don't.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. I'm just being a fucker. Anyway, it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago? I don't remember.
Okay.
It was a prototype. And I'm not saying that to be a dick. I'm just saying it was before it was even, like, released, right?
Right.
It was, like, two prototypes running around there. And that thing was in use day and night and night and day and night and day. And everybody'd sit down and play it and say, that's great. I want to play it again. What do you mean there's a line? I can't play it again. I'm very disheartened. And, you know, and I played it, and I was like, you know, there's not much to this. I mean, it's not bad the first time, but I guarantee it's going to be an 8 the first time, a 6 the second time, and like a 5 after that.
You're right in line with Michael Barnes on that. That's exactly what he said. And you haven't even heard what he said. That's what he said.
Well, now, it's important to note, I did say earlier that I don't have a problem with what he says. It's how he says it, okay?
Right. Of course, he doesn't use words like fucker on the air either.
Well, you know.
But that's okay, Dirk.
That's all right.
That's all right.
Anyway, the point is like, yes, you're right, but frankly, what I said there is very important because of the fact that, like,
See, my point was, that was getting back to the whole tax on board game questions and everything, kind of afraid to really tell us what you think because you're... You know, you don't want to hurt the designer's feelings.
No. That's not the motivation.
What I was saying in that is, I think this is the kind of thing that your written response here is the kind of thing that sounds good on paper, but to me, it's just a cop out. And
you're more than welcome to think that, Steve. But the thing is like, I mean, frankly, I know I have some notoriety, be it ill-deserved, in the board gaming circles, right?
No, you're too hard on yourself. It's not ill-deserved.
No, it is, because ultimately, the thing is like, I have very strong opinions, but the thing is like, I don't have strong opinions now. It's not because I give a shit about the publishers. I don't. I swear to you, I don't. I feel for them when I'm face to face with them. I have no problem lighting them up when they're not around. That's not the point.
All right, call Reiner a name right now, then, to prove it.
No, what are you kidding me? I call him a diva. How can I be? I don't know how I can be any more insulting than that.
All right. I must have missed that. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. All I'm saying is I call him a prima donna. Wait. No, I'm saying,
excellent. Keep going. You're on a roll.
Hell yeah. The thing is like this. When I look at a game and I look at a game design, right?
Right. I'm with you.
I will look at it, and the whole point is for me to kind of figure out how to mini-max my way through it to get to the victory, right? Now, I happen to be fairly good at the first game that we play. You and I sit down, we both learn a game, chances are pretty good, I'm gonna figure it out quicker than you are. That's just the way, that's one of the things I'm...
That's kind of a presumptuous statement there, Dirk.
It is, and frankly, I'm okay with that. The point is more just the idea that you know, I might be able to get to the quote-unquote, like, bad part of the game quicker than most, okay? But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm actually smarter than everybody else or that I actually know anything.
No, but you played a lot of games. I see where you played a lot of games.
I have played a lot of games, and so that after a while, I can kind of pretty much just say, listen, that's the way it is.
Right.
The problem is really, it isn't, the people I'm trying to save when I do that is actually not the publishers, and that's the problem. That's where I think you're going wrong.
Okay. Tell me where I'm going wrong.
I think who I'm trying to save are the people, the gamers, right? Because I went through that already. I'm not trying to save you from going through it. I mean, a lot of it has to do with the fact that the games ultimately don't have a whole lot of replayability to them, right?
Right.
So far be it from me to actually take that experience away from you.
Ah,
honestly,
okay.
Where it is. Because the thing is like, if I'm in a shitty mood and I play the greatest game, I'm going to hate it. If I play the greatest game and I'm sitting around a table...
No, see, that's where I disagree with you. Like, if I'm in a shitty mood and I play a great game, it's only going to improve my mood.
Well, that that's you, that's me, I don't know what to tell you. The thing is like, the more gaming I do, the more social it is for me. And the thing is like, you haven't played a game with Greg Schlosser, right? But I guarantee that you put Greg Schlosser and a couple of his buddies and you sitting around the worst game you can think of, and you're going to have a hell of a lot more fun than you thought you were going to have, all right? And that's ultimately what's really, really, really important. When I sit down, I play a game with my good friend Morgan Duncanville.
I don't deny that, but my point is that I'm still going to know, I may have a good time, but when I come away from that, I'm still going to realize it was a bad game. It's not going to influence make me think it's a good game. It's still going to be a bad game.
Maybe, but I'm not sure that I buy that. Because, I mean, the thing is like, so many of the games are quote-unquote, like, middle. The thing is like, after I see, you know, after I read all these people, I read these reviews of people, you know, and whatnot, and I start extrapolating. I'm like, how could you possibly say that's a 9 when it's clearly a 6? And then you reverse that. How can you say that's a 6 when it's clearly a 9?
I agree with that. That's why all the reviews I do, I either recommend the game or I don't.
Well, I mean,
black and white for me.
That makes sense, and I agree with that. But the problem is ultimately a lot of people feel frustrated with that because then you're just whoring yourself out because binary is easier than some sort of sliding scale. In itself.
I wouldn't say it was easier because you definitely have to commit yourself because if you give a game a 6 or a 7, like, and this is where I call my theory of the murky middle. I don't know if you've heard this.
I have.
Yeah, okay. It's where Greg or Tom can give a review in 5, 6, or 7,
yeah,
and still ensure the supply of free games coming in without insulting. You know, a 7, okay, but it doesn't do the gamer any good. I think it's a total waste. I want them to be, tell us good or bad. Is the game good or bad? Recommend it or don't. Stop pussyfooting around and recommend the game or not. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, but I think you're framing it in a way that actually makes it seem, the thing is like, while I won't necessarily disagree with the fact that Tom wants more games, right? No, the thing is like, I'm just not sure that, like, it's necessarily nefarious, especially these days. I don't know. Ultimately, you know, yes, that's a possibility. The question is whether or not it necessarily matters, I guess, in my opinion.
All I'm saying is that you and I can discuss it and disagree and let the listeners decide, right?
Absolutely.
Right? And, you know, I don't hate you for arguing with me.
Hell no. I agree with that part. That, there is...
And that's what I'm talking about. That's the whole point. When I bring up these names, I have to bring up the names of my posts on the Geek or they won't know what the hell I'm talking about. And when I bring up a Greg Schlosser or Vassal, I'm not insulting them personally. I'm insulting the idea of getting a free game and saying it's a legitimate review. I'm not calling Tom a name. If you look carefully through all of my posts...
I listen.
Yeah.
I know you're right. I know you're right. And ultimately, that's why, when it's all said and done, I have a hard time really coming down on you guys, because I know you're right. And I know that ultimately, yes, you are calling them, but the thing is like, the truth of the matter is, regardless of how you think you're coming off, it's easy to see how they can take it personally. I mean...
I don't see that. I really don't. I mean,
anyway,
I think what it is, I think, is what you've got on that site, or maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not, it's that Euro Elite thing I'm talking about.
There is absolutely, without a doubt, there is a lot of elitism going on about that. And a lot of that, as I said, I think goes back to the whole idea that when people discover these games, it is an amazing revelation to them. You also have to think about the personality types that you're generally dealing with. Now, I don't know about you much very personally, Steve, but I think I might be able to make a couple assumptions. I think perhaps maybe you're probably not a computer guy, right?
Correct.
Well,
not a technical guy at all, no.
The thing is like, I have a pretty good idea about the people that don't come to my website, and more importantly, the people that come and stay. But 90% of them are coders. They're all programmers, right?
Right.
And if you...
90% that high. You think it's that high?
I think it's probably more close to 70, but still. Yes, it's very high, I think. in terms of, well, actually, the population of Euro snoots, as you like to call them, is probably very high with computer people, just because the designs themselves really, really, really appeal to somebody that has that mindset. And then, beyond that, there's the fact that those people have a tendency to, A, be thin-skinned, be very reactionary, and very polar.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Now, Aldi, when I talked to Aldi, he didn't say this per se, but you can tell me if I'm right or wrong or this. Now, I got the feeling that Aldi's not entirely thrilled with some of the posts by the Ameritrash people like Barnes. But I also got the feeling, reading between the lines, that he's not too happy with some of the Euro people complaining about those posts and threatening, because it's his and yours website. Am I right about that?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is like, you know, I know Rick personally. I know Greg personally. I've known Greg for many, 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 many years. He was one of my really first, really good non-local gamer friends. He invited me to come to golf games years and years ago.
Right.
So I know him. I mean, you know, regardless of how I feel about his personal politics, his whatever, I have a lot of respect for him. And so when it comes to, I guess my point, what is my point? Hell, I don't remember. The point is more just that, like, it's just not nefarious. It's not intentional. It was not designed. It just kind of happened.
You're talking about on the website.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's just the thing is like, you know, I appreciate that when you say Greg Schlosser, you're not you don't necessarily mean Greg Schlosser per se.
Right, because I've never met him. And Michael said the same thing. He's never met him. They're just internet personalities, just like you are.
Sure, whatever. I mean, but I guess the thing is like, it's hard for me to be, I guess, in such a small niche hobby like it is, I guess it's kind of hard for me to expect everybody who's a quote-unquote luminary to be like a normal, like, public figure. You can't expect them to be thick-skinned and to take everything well. I mean,
that's a good point.
Expect to get attacked for putting their very hard work out there. That's ultimately why it is that they get bent out of shape really, really quickly.
Now, I think attack is a little harsh there.
Well, perception of attack. I agree with in general that most of the time they aren't personal attacks per se. There's nobody saying you're a dummy head. But at the same time, anytime you invoke somebody's name, essentially, you know, like you did with me on your very first show, how can you not essentially think of it in a personal sense?
Right, right.
It is. I mean, but at the same time, I put myself out there. I admit that I put myself out there. That's my thing. I mean,
right. I think a lot of the problem is, and I've run into this, like on my post, some guys have told me that my post, I sound like an ass, a jackass. But then when you hear the voice on the radio, you hear the love in the voice, right? The funniness.
Yeah.
And it's not in, oh, I get it now. Sometimes those inflections don't come over in email or postings.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Ultimately, isn't that really, but I mean, the thing is you're telling me then that I should give you the benefit of the doubt that you're not an asshole, right?
Right.
But at the same time, you're essentially passing judgment on all these people.
No, I'm not passing judgment. I'm just giving my opinion.
Whatever. Passing judgment, giving your opinion. The thing is like, you know, these guys, you knew it was going to happen, but they didn't necessarily, you know. And so I know these guys personally. So for me, I'm not going to pull any punches necessarily, but I'm also probably not as inclined to go after them.
Okay. Let's kind of wind down here. Do you have you got a game group there in New York now?
Kind of, yeah.
What games are you playing right now with your group?
I say kind of because I'm very irregular. I've essentially co-opted a couple of groups that are local.
Oh, okay.
To show up when I can. So, they play mostly Euro games.
Okay. You got any new luggage stories for us?
You know, it's really, you know, okay.
Was it? Do you own any stock in Samsonite?
No, I don't. It's, it's not Samsonite. No, it's, that was a funny story.
I got, by the way, hey, do you play Cash and Guns?
Sure.
I've got a luggage story for you. I took that recently. I just packed a bunch of games and I put it in my luggage. And I go, oh my God, I'm going through the airport with this Cash and Guns. And I figured the guns, you know, in the game would show up on the x-rays.
No, actually, what you got to be worried about is Pat the Bomb.
Right.
Seriously, but that'll show up on an. That will actually show up.
Will it really?
Yeah, because of the shape of the thing and the way it's stored. That's actually the problem.
Ah, okay. Well, I was pleased to report that the Cash and Guns made it through okay. Probably because I had the guns still in the foam inserts. So
I don't know. I don't know if they'd actually see those, but that's, I don't know.
But anyway, yeah, okay. So that's your luggage story. I thought you'd appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is like, now to defend the last luggage story, the number of people that were really upset about that. I mean, I was literally just staring at this huge stack of games, and I got to get it back. How am I going to do it? I mean,
which was a brilliant solution, I must say, on your part, Derek.
Yeah, it was. I'm a gamer. I am not like a collector. I
am with you on that.
Play the game, and after that, I don't care about it.
Right.
So, anyway.
Now, let me ask you, do you think the fact that you're coming on my show tonight will endanger your future invitations to Gathering of Friends? Am I putting those future invitations in jeopardy, Dirk?
Yeah, well, you know, you really put me on the spot there. if it is, so be it. I'm okay with that.
No, you in your email to me when I asked you to come on the show, you said you had a few choice words for my listeners. So before we end this, I'm going to let you have the few choice words with my listeners.
Oh, wait a minute. You're assuming I haven't already shared the choice.
Well, I just wanted to give you the opportunity if there was any more that you left out.
I got nothing. I will say you do a good show. You know, there's nothing wrong with it at all. I think it's a great idea. I applaud your efforts, and it's, you know, as I said, I hope in a couple of years you're half as famous as Tom Vassell is.
God help me. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. It's a real, what a great great point you make.
I will say, though, Steve, the second I feel that your popularity has risen above mine, I'm going to delete your account. Personal. You have an inferiority complex, and it has to manifest itself.
Well, yeah.
I appreciate that. So, yeah, if I'm ever in Houston, I'm never going to go to Houston. Never mind. So, that's fine. If you ever come up to New York, you're more than welcome to come join me for a beer. How about that?
Ah, sounds good. In all seriousness, you've really put together the best website on board games out there. Everybody knows that, hands down.
I won't disagree with you. But I say that in full humbleness, because frankly, as I said, it really ceased being our animal several years ago. I mean, the thing is, ultimately, I think you guys really attribute a lot more control to us than we actually deserve, because at best, right now, we can like nudge you guys in the right direction. We can't do anything other than that. I mean, you guys get really upset if we delete anything. We can't do that. You know, I mean, all we can do these days is basically just kind of try to kind of vaguely push you in a general direction.
Right, right.
If the website is great, it's because of the people that come there. And that's ultimately it. I hope that net-net, you know, if we lose a couple people here and there, we're going to pick up a couple more people.
Well, now, one of the posters on my said you're picking up about 5,000 a day. Is that right?
Yeah.
5,000 new users a day. That's incredible.
Well, I mean, we generate some pretty serious numbers. We get about 500,000 unique IP addresses every month, and about 14 million pages are generated every month. The thing is like, the question is really whether or not we retain the users, right? And that's what, you know, you mentioned this earlier, the moderation system.
Yeah.
Despite what you think, it really, I swear, is a prelude to a thing you haven't seen yet, right? It is. I mean, we're designers. We're software designers, right?
Right.
To take little steps, and the point of that was not to draw fire. It was really to generate data that we will later use to filter things for different people, not specifically to moderate.
Ah, okay.
Realize where it is. I mean, it had a nice benefit in that it did that, but anyway. So.
Okay, well, that's good. It certainly seems to be settled in and seems to be working.
I hope so. I mean, I hope it works, but who knows. So.
Do you actually do the programming on that, or does Aldi do it, or do you share it, or what?
Once upon a time, yes, I helped him. These days, no. When he fully committed to it, he really took over everything. It's a question of if you design software, you realize that two people working on the same project ends up being not twice as much power. It ends up being like 1.5 times as much power.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so putting more programmers into a project actually doesn't make it go faster.
Ah, okay.
It was really, the thing is he knows where all the bodies are buried. He knows where everything, all the switches are. So it was really kind of a question of expediency and the fact that he's getting paid for it. I mean,
yeah.
So
that's fantastic. Fantastic that you're able to turn a hobby like that into a full-time thing is, you know, great.
Aldi is a man. I mean,
yeah.
I help him out where I can, but it's, you know, most of the credit has to go to that man.
All right. I don't want to take up your whole night. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed it, Dirk.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I don't think you're nearly as unhinged as everybody makes you out to be.
Unhinged? No, I may not be unhinged, but I have been disrespectful. Dirk was right. I should have. These guys, Schlosser and Thornquist, have done, and even Vassal, they've done an incredible amount of work. And, you know, I really, really have been disrespectful. And I want to pay, and I kind of feel bad, you know, that Thornquist deleted his account. So I want to end the show in a different way. No, none of the hard rock stuff or none of the rock and roll stuff that I usually go out on. Rick, this is for you. I want to do a tribute to the great Rick Thornquist. So just picture this, folks. I'm on stage, spotlight. The lights are low. Here's my tribute to gaming's only Rick Thornquist. And now Rick deletes his account as he types his last review in. He did what he had to do as Michael Barnes began to boo him. He's moved so many cubes. It seems a shame we gotta lose him. That charming smile on a cartoon head. Rick did it his way. Regrets, Rick had a few. He should have gone on the ultimate podcast, but it doesn't really matter now, 'cause these Euro games, you know they won't last. Rick planned
each careful strategy while playing Kalis or El Grande and more, much more than this, Rick did it his way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when Rick played so many games he could not lose. But now his cardboard's gone and so is board game news. Now Rick's just got the Euro game blues. He's faced it all, sitting on a bathroom stall. He did it his way. Thank you, Rick.